A principal tool since the time of John Dewey's involvement in reforming education has been the use of behavioral psychology in the classroom, the response stimuli theory of animal behavior. This methodology, known by several names, is patterned after the work of Pavlov, who taught dogs to salivate on command by teasing them with meat at the same time that he rang a bell. In order to train children like animals to make widgets rather than to educate them to be thinkers, the professional educators use this stimulus-response method to teach while they focus on scientifically measurable outcomes to judge the results on the entire group of students rather than the excellence of any individuals. This mastery learning speaks of concern about equivalency of educational opportunity, but its equivalent mediocrity. No Child Left Behind sounds compassionate, but it's dastardly in its implications, and not just for the academically slower students, but for all. Charlotte Iserby, an official in the Reagan administration, U.S. Department of Education, who documented much of what the plutocrats have done to America in the name of education, writes that this deliberate dumbing down of American teachers and youth was necessary in order to implement the performance-based workforce training agenda planned since the early 1900s. Government-run schools are the primary reason why we remain ignorant of all the things that we're learning here and why we're fearful of getting too far out of our box. Mrs. Iserby writes more about that. If American parents understood this dehumanizing method being implemented in the nation's schools, they would see the many dangers to their children. One of these dangers being that after 12 years of rewards for correct answers, will their children ever have the courage or be motivated to do anything on their own, to take a stand when what's left of their principles is challenged? If this method is implemented in all schools of the nation, and I mean all, public, private, religious, and homeschools, in many cases due to the use of computers or Skinner's box, as is happening right now, our nation will become a nation of robotic drones responding to whomever wishes to control them for whatever purpose. Well, one daring government school superintendent, Dr. Ray Powell of South St. Paul, Minnesota, saw this methodology as brainwashing and spoke out against it in 1975. He then asked a prescient question. Is the prime concern in education today not to impart knowledge, but to change attitudes so that children can or will willingly accept the controlled society? Are the public schools being unwittingly reshaped to accomplish this and without realizing it? Arizona Congressman John Conlon saw it the same year. He described one federally funded education program for 10-year-olds as directed, quote, to mold children's social attitudes and beliefs along lines that set them apart and alienated them from the beliefs and moral values of their parents and local communities, unquote. And the time spent on developing these new attitudes and beliefs soon outweighed that spent on traditional academic subjects, also by design. National Education Association President Catherine Barrett made the following remarks in 1976. The so-called basic skills, which currently represent nearly the total effort in elementary schools, will be taught in one quarter of the present school day. The remaining time will be devoted to what is truly fundamental and basic, time for academic inquiry, time for students to develop their own interests, time for dialogue between students and teachers. When this happens, and it's near, the teacher can rise to his true calling. More than a dispenser of information, the teacher will be a conveyor of values, a philosopher. Finally, if our children are to be human beings who think clearly, feel deeply, and act wisely, we will answer definitely the question, who should make what decisions? Teachers no longer will be victims of change. We will be the agents of change. This is in keeping with the father of mastery learning, Benjamin Bloom's definition. The purpose of education in the schools is to change the thoughts, feelings, and actions of students. Through UNESCO, the United Nations sold internationalist control of education under the guise of local control. Decentralization, site-based management, charter schools, choice in education, etc., were planned by the UN over 25 years ago to fool naive school boards and citizens into believing that they were calling the shots, when in actuality, control was situated fully in New York, London, and Timbuktu. That control was cemented in 1979 when, in a blatant violation of the First and Tenth Amendments, Liberal Democrat President Jimmy Carter gave the NEA what he'd promised them while campaigning to be elected, the U.S. Department of Education. But proving that the plutocrats and education elites do not wear the hat of only one political party, the next administration, that of conservative Republican hero Ronald Reagan, whose party had promised to rid the nation of the new Department of Education during his campaign, effectively transformed the essential character of the nation's public schools from teaching, the most traditional and conservative role of the schools, to workforce training, perceived as liberal and progressive. And now, under the guise of research and development, the U.S. federal government has its fingers in every classroom of every school in the United States. Following the communist pattern of blending school with work training, school-to-work programs took two forms. A 1979 newspaper article told of the work of a Vermont commission that suggested creation of a 4,000-student residential school for students ages 4 through 19. The state-run school would be a center for educational research and teacher training. The commission recommends students should be permitted to drop out of formal schooling at age 13 as long as they get a job or enroll in an alternative training program. And today, rising high school freshmen must choose a career track, college with only college prep classes, nothing intermediate, or tech school bound with no college-required classes. The result is a never-ending flow of human resources. Another innocuous-sounding development in education has been public-private partnerships. Instead of local school decisions being made by elected school boards, these boards appoint committees and commissions made up of local business leaders to make recommendations and to determine future directions of the schools. While our first reaction might be positive, hey, this means more decision-making involvement by the citizens, bear in mind that these private citizens are not acting in their capacity as parents, but as business owners, and businesses' first concerns are with developing future employees and consumers. And as long as these human resources can follow directions, little more education is necessary. Harvard professor Anthony Ettinger, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, wrote in 1982, "Our idea of literacy, I am afraid, is obsolete because it rests on a frozen and classical definition. The present traditional concept of literacy has to do with the ability to read and write. But the real question that confronts us today is, how do we help citizens function well in their society? How can they acquire the skills necessary to solve their problems? Do we, for example, really want to teach people to do a lot of sums or write in a fine round hand when they have a $5 handheld calculator or word processor to work with? Or do we really want to have everybody literate, reading and writing in a traditional sense?" Of course, if calculators and word processors and computers are suddenly deemed tools of terror, they can be outlawed by a Patriot Act, and then everybody thus educated will become deaf, dumb, and mute, making the First Amendment of no consequence.